listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that if you're going to be making any purchases on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, please go to www.9to5.cc first and click the links in the sidebar or at the bottom of the page to support the site. It makes no difference to you, but it really helps us out a lot. Enjoy the show. Thanks.
That was the most normal start we've possibly ever had.
Yeah.
You weren't even talking about wrestling or saying anything offensive or insulting previous guests.
I'm pretty sober.
Yeah. Shame on you.
Nah, I'm sorry.
He'll get there.
Two guests today.
All right.
Episode, do you know what episode we're at, Keith?
I think 25.
Baby's 25.
24, 25.
They're pretty cool if you're on episode 25. we got two guests on today, and we have John Fallon and Christian Veal. Is it Veal? Is that
Veal?
Veal? Yep. Okay, I'm sorry.
I already screwed
this up. And they are respectively the star and director of a film to be released, Billy Trigger.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also starring the one, the only, Fred Williamson, who's not here. But we're certainly going to talk about him a whole bunch.
Great fucking man.
Yeah. Guys, thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming on today.
Pleasure.
No problem.
I didn't meet you, Christian.
No, we didn't.
I met John a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's sort of a set visit kind of thing, although we weren't actually on the set.
Well, we actually used the bathroom in the back for a scene.
So it was. I'm sorry.
You know, if you want to go with logistics, yes, we were on a set.
And
so you guys met each other in a bathroom?
Sorry. No, we didn't actually.
No. It's only on weekends.
That would have been a better story, though.
Yeah, exactly.
And this film is being backed, produced by Joe Blow.
It's financed by Joe Blow.
Whom, John, you also work for,
yes,
right?
Yes, I
run. Well, now straighten this out for me, because you had a website that was then incorporated. You had your own thing that was then incorporated by Joe Blow. Like, I was reading about that. I didn't quite understand it.
No, Joe Blow basically, before like movie websites even existed, I think Any Cool News was the first one that came, and Burj Garabedian, Joe Blow, started his own website. At the time, I was an actor, a working actor, auditioning. I was also a script doctor for local production companies. And I love horror movies.
Right.
So he's like, hey, send me an email. I was like, dude, you know, how about, you know, you add a section on my website and write about these stupid fucking horror movies that you know so much about. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. I'll keep my writing fresh for screenwriting. Why the fuck not? So I did it. And we were kind of like the second out of the hatch after Ain't It Cool. And it picked up, and next thing you know, I had a new career path, and there you have it.
And your thing is called Arrow in the Head, right?
Yeah,
that's the horror section. That's my baby.
Yeah.
Right. And Christian, what's your background coming into this project? Like, what do you?
Oh my God, it's a long story too. I mean,
that's okay. We got an hour.
I've been making movies since I'm 80 years old. In 2000, I did a horror film called Sam Ain here in Montreal with Richard Grieco and a whole bunch of porn stars. This guy wanted to come on set, and I didn't like much of the press. One of the actors convinced us to get him, and I remember him because you auditioned you for something else.
The Hunter, five years before.
And then, you know, became friends from then on. Gave him some pointers from his own, like, business dealings and production. And he came see us. He worked with us on another film we did, Recon. And we ended up doing three series. And he ended up co-writing a script and then writing the whole script. And we worked together from different functions for years. So, and we shot another movie together where he was the star in. It's called Dead End in 2006.
Okay.
Which was very critically acclaimed. So, yeah.
Dead End was... What was...
It's a revenge movie.
Dead End sounds familiar to me. Was
you
that...
You kill my wife, now I kill all of you really violently.
Right.
Type of movie.
Was that a Fantasia, that one?
Yeah, that was a Fantasia.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Was that? There's a good chance I saw it.
There's a chick at the beginning gets raped with a baseball bat.
Oh, no, I didn't see that one.
And gets her fetus ripped out of her belly.
I did not see that one. Yeah. I would have remembered that.
I feel like I would have remembered that. Yeah. We usually remember the fetus ones.
Yeah, the fetus ones really stand
out. That's the first 8 minutes. That's usually when people walk out.
Yeah.
Usually, like, a lot of distributors, it's a great film. The opening is so, like, but we wanted to do something that justified the problem we had with vigilante movie. And actually, we decided to do that after watching the Punisher movie they did, like the first one. There's
complete
crap.
Right.
It was awful. And then we said, fuck that. And we wanted to do something that's a real vigilante movie, and we wanted to do something that was so extreme.
Something with baseball bat rape.
That would justify why the guy would go so hard and break the law and not give a shit about anything and try to kill these guys.
At any point, did you guys consider titling the film Baseball Bat Rape?
No. I think...
Was that
a working title.
Like, I think that was
Baseball Bat Rape.
Maybe for the sequel.
Wasn't it in the script or wasn't it improv, right?
Yeah, it was on the set thing. The movie opens with...
It was an improv baseball
bat? Yeah.
Just go crazy. Just go crazy with the bat. Do whatever. No, don't. Oh, he's already doing it. Okay.
The funniest thing is when... at one point is this girl that kicks the woman in the belly and stuff.
And she's pregnant.
She's pregnant. And it was suggested by... one of her cameramen, and his wife was actually pregnant, and she ended up like delivering by the end of the shoot. He had to rush out to go to the hospital.
She wanted that kid out of her.
Yeah.
She didn't want to leave it to chance.
Or baseball bats.
It was kind of weird. Yeah.
Well, that's the there's a like about a 2 minute sequence. My girlfriend and I watch a lot of horror movies and all that shit.
Terrible horror films.
Yeah. Well, I'm good to terrible.
Mostly terrible.
Human Centipede 2.
Yeah.
The scene...
No, that's a good one.
In terms of, like, scenes involving a fetus, that didn't get my girlfriend. What did get my girlfriend was when the guy pulled his lips off the ass and it was just, like, shit and blood pouring out of his mouth. That got her instantly. And she was like, I've never seen her go, like, white in the face. Like, we watched Serbian film and she was like, fine.
Yeah, she's got a pretty high tolerance.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, I would say, yeah.
Like, she was, like, okay with newborn porn. Like,
but it looked like a fucking dummy, that's why.
Yeah, but, and again, and the same thing with the baby. The baby, like, dropping out into the car seat, getting crushed with the pedal. Spoilers for Human Centipede 2.
She laughed her head off?
No, she was like, ha, ha, ha. And then the guy pulls his lips off the ass. Shouldn't blame. She's like, oh, God. And I was like, that was the thing that fucked you up? Like, not the baby's skull getting compressed in with the gas pedal. Nope. Shit and blood in the mouth is where she drew the line. She, like, blanched in the face and, like, bolted out of the room for a second. Came back and watched the rest of it. Like,
wow. Yeah.
But shit and blood will do that to you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's because that was the only color was the brown, right?
I guess
it was
black and white.
To distinguish it from the blood, I suppose they put the brown in. Like, just so you knew that, oh, those are two fluids in their mouth. Yeah, but... Yeah, that, I can imagine that the whole, like, most people, at least most women, the maternal stuff, like, the other girl who was watching it, the baby part, like, just, like, shook her up, because she was like, oh, my God, like, she's about to be married next year and all that stuff, babies are in her future, so the idea of having a miscarriage running away from Human Centipede, well, like, and then smashing your own baby's head in by accident, or on purpose, who knows.
Now, before I forget, I just want to ask real quick. I screwed up your name at the beginning. I said Ville, but it's Viel.
Viel, yeah.
What kind of name is that?
It's French, but it's old French.
Old French?
Normandy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true. You look like a fucking Viking, man.
Yeah.
It's true. He can fuck people up.
All right. So now I know that. Yeah. All right. Very good.
Now I know. I didn't even know it was a Nordic type name. Yeah, Nordic, I didn't know that.
So now Keith suspected that I was going to turn the whole podcast into a Let's Talk About Fred Williamson for an Hour podcast. So that being said, let's talk about Fred Williamson for now. So how did that – I mean, first of all, how hard was it or how easy was it? I mean, what was the process like in terms of getting Fred Williamson to be part
of this
film?
You want to take that one? Or I'll take it?
Yeah, I think it's tag team that one.
All right, you do the opening, I'll do the closing.
I met Fred a few times, like, in the past, and he's always at the American Film Market near the bar. Every year he's there, and he sells his projects. He goes there, makes all his deals during the 8 days of the American Film Market.
So this is where?
In Santa Monica in California.
Okay.
So I met him a couple times, very briefly, like, not enough, like, barely just say hi. We have another friend, actually a friend of John's, that actually worked with him in the past, and I was talking to him about bringing him in over for another show I'm doing called Heroes of the North. It's a series about Canadian superheroes. But then the cost and logistics were a bit complex. But then when the deal with Billy Trigger came up, I said, well, maybe let's try for him, for Billy Trigger, because it would have been a longer period of time and stuff like that, and a better budget for him. So we approached him, and didn't take too long to get him on board. Then the fun started. The man is a cunning negotiator, so we had a lot of back and forth, back and forth, and he has all these rules, like, you know, that he's a very established character.
Right.
He has all these rules. He always gets the girl. He never dies.
He never runs away from a fight. He doesn't get injured.
Yeah.
So he's playing the villain in the movie. Well, quote unquote villain, because pretty much everybody in the movie are bad guys.
Right.
You know, depends on the perspective you're looking at it from. So, you know, so I'm doing fucking script rewrites, and I think it's the script I've rewritten the most. There's at least 16 or 17 final drafts.
Right.
I stopped calling them final drafts. All right, it never ends. All right,
and then at one point, I was like, enough is enough. And I called him, and I said, listen, that's it. Like, I guess we're not going to get along, and it's not going to work out. I'm sorry. But, you know, we have to move on. This is getting ridiculous. It's not like Fred Williamson, the movie. It's called Billy Trigger, and it has a hero, or an anti-hero, but it still has a hero, and we can't, like, you know, it can't be just your movie. So he wrote me back, and he said, okay, fine. And then half an hour later, he wrote me back again. He said, don't let my good looks fool you. I'm still the hammer.
He said that so much. Was there a day that you weren't with him that he didn't refer to himself as the hammer?
No, never.
No.
He so fluently speaks in the third person.
In the third person.
Yeah, but you know what? He gets away with it.
Yeah, I know. He does. Like, some guys sound like jerks when they do it.
Yeah.
And he was just doing it. It's so natural. Yeah.
No. I met a lot of actors, like stars or B movie stars, that talk like that. And he's the only one that managed to pull it off. Everybody else looked like complete buffoons.
Yeah, that's true.
So after that, it was pretty much a done deal. And then flew him over, and we're a bit nervous because, you know, the back and forth and stuff, you know. He's very funny, but you can't tell his tone in the email. Until you meet him, you realize he's joking a lot.
Yeah.
No, but until you see him, like, you're not sure. So I'm like, oh my God, what kind of psycho we're being. We're gonna have the longest 5 weeks of my life. But no, he actually turned out to really a great, cool guy.
Yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, he became my angel on my shoulder. That's what I call him.
My introduction to him was like, I don't know this guy from a hole in the wall, right? And I show up to the set visit a couple of weeks ago. I told you about this. Did I tell you about this?
You didn't. I left for Mexico almost right away after.
I show up. And I just get there, and it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. It was in Griffintown. I don't really know the area too well. And I get there, and I get to this place, and I walk in. And I'm just sort of like wandering around, and I walk into the room that Fred was coming out of. Mm. And as we sort of cross paths, and I'm like, said, hey, how's it going? You know, because I didn't expect to meet him like that. And he says, I'm going. It's going all right. How you doing? And I'm like, I'm doing pretty well. And he sort of looks at me up and down, pats me on the gut, gives me a little pat on the belly. He says, "Yeah, you're doing well." I was like, "What?" And then he just kept walking, and I was like, "The fuck was that? What? Like, what just happened, Fred Williamson?"
Fred Williamson.
You got hammered, dude.
Yeah, I got hammered. I got fucking hammered, yeah.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. But sometimes those jokes by email. You're like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah,
Where's he coming from?
Well.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he's got his cigar. And he's like, the omnipresent cigar, right? He's got these, like...
Oh, he has his own cigar plantation, actually.
Yes. I found that out later on, too. I said, I'm saying to him, because just like, you know, trying to make polite conversation, and like, so does this cigar ever get lit, or what's the story with that? He's like, yeah, maybe later on. So they're like... And I know nothing about cigars, right? Yeah. Really, it's just polite conversation at this point. And I'm like, so what kind of brandy are you smoking there? He says, oh, no, these are my own. He's like, I got a plantation. He's like, I got. Where is it? Do you remember where it was?
Cuba.
In Cuba. Yeah. He's like, I got a family, and I own an estate down there, and I own some land. The family, they live there, and they live there for free, eat for free, everything. All they got to do is make me cigars.
It's true.
I was like, that is the greatest and most insane thing I've ever heard in my life. That's Fred Williamson.
Living well.
Yeah. And he's, how old is he? What is he, like,
74.
74. Guy looks like 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and he's more in shape than all of us put together.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's amazing.
Well, it's like, when he was, I was like looking at pictures or whatever of Fred Williamson, and from the 70s to today, it's like, maybe a bit of hairline recession, but that's it.
That's
like,
about
there's like
it.
40 years of aging, and he looks exactly the same.
Yeah, and the stash—he got the stash. Yeah.
The stash is amazing.
My son guy was talking to him about his age because his father is the same age, and his father, he's not getting away. So, and he was telling you, he started counting the white hair he had on his hair. He counted exactly 4. So yeah, no, he's an impressive guy, and very generous. For a movie star, I mean, it's all about him too. At the same time, he has an ego and everything. But for a movie star, he was very generous.
Generous in what sense?
Always helping out the other actors because I think in his mind, if they look good, I look good. He was always like giving counsel and helping us out. At one point, we had a situation where we had a very complex action sequence and it was getting like totally muddled and we're kind of losing all of ourselves in it and trying to figure out how to make it work. Because the location didn't match what we had in mind, and it was very difficult to make it work in terms of logistics. And he came around, and he came with a suggestion, and just like the clouds cleared, and we saw everything. Yeah. And I was like, wow, okay, the guy has a lot of experience. He's also a producer and director and stuff like that.
He's pretty much done every single thing he possibly can in the film.
When that guy gave me advice, I listened.
Yeah.
Some people would come and give me advice. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Like Walter.
Here's
what you got to do, John.
I was very surprised by that, but I've never seen a movie star do that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
And now, and this was explained when we got together. He is and he isn't playing the head of an Irish gang.
He is not. He used to be. I mean, initially the whole script.
He used to be Irish, or
The whole script initially, it was all the Irish mafia. That's
right.
I always thought there was never enough Irish mob movies. I mean, we get the Italian mobs, we get black gangs and shit like that, but not enough. State of Grace. We got Boondock Saints.
Departed.
That's three. That's it. So I really wanted to do an Irish mob movie. And when Fred came, then I changed the character to half black and half Irish.
Or just black Irish. There you go.
So basically, he has a black son and a white daughter. But through shooting and everything, it just felt like it was the wisest thing to not mention what kind of mob it is.
Right.
It's a mob. There's Fred Williamson at the head of it, and I'm an Irish hitman that works for him, and that's it.
Cool.
And his daughter is still from Irish, from an Irish mother, and all that stuff. So we kind of,
It's not remains of the day. We're blowing shit up. Fucking people up.
Is it set in Montreal or is it?
We don't mention where it's set. But I think
you can kind of tell.
It's kind of hard. We didn't try to disguise it.
What were some of your main shooting points in the city?
We shot from both sides, from the east to west. We shot in the east, on Ontario, totally in the east. We shot at Mickabins up the street.
You're saying on Ontario Street?
Yeah, on Ontario Street, yeah. And then we shot up the street here in Mickabins.
Okay.
We shot...
Blainville.
We shot in the west side near the Turcotte Exchange. It was pretty limited. Geographically, it was pretty limited in terms of locations, but it's still a lot of locations, almost a different location every day. So,
Turcotte Yards, where if any of us ever had to hide a body, it would be like pretty much your first thought.
Yeah.
my two exes are there actually.
I live in NEG, and my girlfriend's family lives in the south, so we drive around that area near Angrenia Mall all the time. And just every time you drive by it, you're like, how is this right in between two major population kind of centers, LaSalle and NEG, and you're like, and then there's this weird wasteland where there's just train yards and highways and chain fences and stuff, and you're like, what the fuck?
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's always It's a creepy ass location.
Yeah. It's a good location though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, you're from there all the time. I love it.
And was it a pretty smooth shoot or?
It was a smooth shoot for the most part, in terms of surprisingly so, because we had a very limited resource. What was tough is just physically, it was like very draining because we had a very small crew, so we had to do like tons of jobs, like several different jobs. And then that was the most demanding part. And the last week was really tough. Yeah. Like the first 2 weeks we were expecting worse, and we got not so bad. But the third week was really tough logistically. We had car scenes and stuff. It's very difficult to do a car scene with little money and
location double booking on you. So
yeah,
you,
that happened a couple of times.
That
for
happened
some
twice.
Reason.
Yeah.
What happened twice? Sorry.
Well, you show up.
Reserve a location.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah,
and then you show up there. You know, you confirm, and right. then somebody else didn't look at the board, and they booked somebody else at the same time.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, is there a fist fight that ensues as to who gets?
You can't
that
really,
location?
You know, like
you got to make decisions and move forward. Man.
Like we had a bunch of extras. One location, particularly, we had a bunch of extras coming in and all that stuff. And like basically, we sat down with the crew and they said, "Well, listen, guys, we have 15 minutes. We have to make a decision. Either we move or we stay and try to deal with the consequences." But it was not like didn't make any sense because it's too long a day.
Did you get Fred to like use his muscle and like?
Well, Fred wasn't there.
Fred
was
there.
Oh, good. Okay, because yeah, no. But if he was there, he probably that situation probably would have gotten regulated.
He'd
really
just
quick.
Light the cigar and be over.
Yeah, just walk him before he says a word. Just light the cigar. Okay, we're out. All right, let him go.
You guys go first. You guys have the location. We'll come when Fred's done.
Well, our makeup artist like called. Her parents happened to have a show, Baie Saint-Mathieu nearby. Mm-hmm. So they call him up. They had nothing. So we moved everything back into the cars and the vehicles, and we just moved everybody. And then we got on the phone to recall back all the extras that were coming at 4, and then reroute them everything. We had to call all the agents, reroute all the actors, and then reset the whole set in a few hours. And we lost 2 hours basically, and yeah, still managed to make our day like before doing any overtime.
Yeah, we didn't do any overtime. Yeah.
But with a tight schedule like that, 2 hours must be losing. 2 hours must be brutal.
It's brutal.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely how you know, in terms of that particular incident, I know Christian agrees, it was nice to see how everybody rose up. It was a moment of crisis.
Right.
Everybody rose up, said, "Hey, let's rock and roll, let's make this work."
Cool.
Because if it doesn't, we're kind of like fucked.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, it's true. Like, everybody, like, it went super smooth that day.
Keith, ask a question. I'm going to get our guests a drink.
What'd you get?
Jameson on the rocks, please.
Cider.
Cider, yeah.
Can you grab me another... St. Ambrose IPA, whatever. Yeah. Whatever the heck it is, since they've lost their deal with Beer Bar.
But it was really amazing because like everybody like worked extra hard and we managed to pull it off, and you know, it's always.
I think that's like probably one of the benefits to working on a smaller budget movie, I guess, is that you're a little more mobile. I suppose like if you're on a giant multimillionaire, that would just be like, well, the day is gone.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but then again, they got the money to.
They have the money to add
go
days
over
to the
budget
shoot
and whatever.
Days.
Yeah, but it's such a waste. I mean, I work on $2 million movies, and it was such a hard time just to get anything done because everybody is like, you know, trying to move a huge piece of metal.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
By the time everything gets in motion, you know.
Yeah, well, like, a lot of
that's a good analogy. Yeah. Actually, huh?
A lot of movie guys like hate it. Like, I don't know, there was Eli Roth has like gone on record as being like making movies in United States and stuff is like the worst place in the world to make it because of the unions, because of the like everything else like that. And he's like, I'm not opposed to unions as an idea. You want everybody to get like paid equitably and like and everything. He's like that's fine. But he's like when everybody who's on set wants to make a movie, but there's some guy in an office who doesn't, you know, and
he doesn't give a fuck.
And as a result, the entire thing grinds to a stop. And he's like, my guys who are like members of your union, they're down to work, but you're saying that they can't or whatever. Like, I don't know. That stuff blows my mind.
Well,
like,
that's a frequent problem, unfortunately. Yeah, yeah. We have that problem too here. I mean, the problem is the people in the office, they don't know what it is to make a movie. Mm-hmm.
And especially not a low-budget movie.
Seven Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, all they see is what's written in the little page. Oh, the buck stopped here.
Yeah.
And even if you don't even infringe on any rules, some of the rules are so stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, there's a rule, they went on strike for that.
Yeah.
There's a rule at ACTRA that the actors have to have control of the temperature at any time. Oh, yeah? How do I do that in the middle of a quarry, middle of nowhere? Yeah. Oh, you have to bring a big trailer
and
heat lamps, and they have to have access to the control of temperature.
There goes the budget.
But also, what's their knowledge level of knowing how they're going to control the temperature on these devices? I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
And blow up the fucking set.
Well, like the thing about the toilets, they can't have the porta potty and stuff. And then what they end up doing, they only use the porta potty. So the union's complaining they use the porta potty. Well, we provided other toilets. They don't use it. What's supposed to do? Take them by the hand? I mean, you know,
walk them over to the other toilet. No, this is your toilet.
It's kind of like the equivalent. It's a good parallel, actually. Thank you. That was a drink I just thanked them for. Kind of like the equivalent of a bureaucrat. You know, behind his desk, telling the guys on the ground fighting a war how to fight the war.
Yeah.
When he's not there, he's not in the field, he's not, you know, ducking bullets. But since he's a higher up, he's going to tell you what to do. But, dude, you're not in a position to tell anybody how to fight. You know what I mean?
You're not even there. You don't even know what's going on.
You don't know what the fuck's going on. You know?
Speaking of not knowing what the fuck's going on, what are you guys talking about?
Some fluff in your mustache.
Oh, nice. It's just a little head.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're talking about, you know, the unions and rules and how...
And a big crew. Oh, it's hard to move with a big crew.
What was the crew size like on this one, this project?
Tiny.
Microscopic. The smallest I've ever worked on with.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the biggest crew you ever worked with, and what was the project?
150 people.
What was the project?
Oh, Samhain.
What's that?
Samhain.
Okay.
Because you did sequels to that, right?
No. There's no damn way.
But what,
that was a nightmare.
Yeah, that's a whole. I keep telling you, you got to write a book about Samhain, man. That shit would be like a 10-hour podcast, guys.
it was awful.
Were there sequels, but not you?
No, for some reason,
I remember the name Samhain in multiple. No, I mean, it's not exactly.
It's a
common
name.
It's a common name, but then there's no way.
You know those horror movies with the word evil somewhere in them.
Yeah.
It's become Evil Breed, so it's evil in it.
They called it Evil Breed: The Legend of Samhain. That's how it was finally distributed, I think, by Lionsgate. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Chopped it to little pieces.
You gotta love Lionsgate, though, right?
I don't know
what your relationship is like with Lionsgate, but I mean, I kind of dislike how they pick up a lot of projects. I'm saying this, and you guys are making faces as I'm saying it.
Lionsgate released our movie and chopped it into little pieces, is what they just said.
Oh, it was his
movie, not mine. I did not catch that.
No,
I'm so sorry. Hey, we're back. I got drinks. That's what happened. I got drinks for people, and stuff was said, and then I didn't hear that. And
no,
then...
that was while you were sitting here, man.
It's all good.
It's all good. Also, too, I don't listen very well sometimes.
That's all good.
Well, I don't know.
To be fair, it wasn't Lionsgate's...
I think Lionsgate actually had an output deal with another company, so...
No, it was a direct Lionsgate.
It was direct Lionsgate,
But it was not their fault that it was chopped up before it got to them.
Lightning outputs through Lionsgate. They pay money to get the name on the fucking box.
No, Lightning was something else.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But anyway,
All right.
But to be fair, it wasn't chopped by Lionsgate, so...
Right.
Is there a way to get it? In its original format, or does it just not exist anymore?
It doesn't exist. I mean, I still have a director's cut with time code and stuff. There's no music. There's no... there's not really, really... Like, it's not really watchable state.
Okay.
But,
I saw it. I thought it was watchable.
Yeah. I did what I could, but... Yeah.
It could have been... It was one of those movies that could have been something. You know, it was very gory and very out of line. Like, at some point, some dude gets... I think it's a hand up his ass. Is that it? And he gets his intestines ripped out of his asshole, and then
I want to see these. You guys keep telling me about these. I want to see. I want to see this. I want to see Dead End.
Dead End's available everywhere.
These are all going on my to see
list. Actually, isn't it playing on SV Bell's channel?
Yeah, it's playing on SV Bell's channel. Yeah.
What channel?
Black Flag TV. I don't know if you know.
Oh, I know Black Flag TV.
Yeah, it plays all the time.
Are you affiliated with Black Flag at all?
No, it's just a friend of mine. I gave him most of my films to play, so he has all my stuff.
My girlfriend works with the guy that's involved with them.
Danny.
His name is Danny.
Danny.
Yeah.
Danny Dejeuner.
Yeah.
We know Danny.
That's cool.
Danny,
That's awesome.
Small world, man.
Danny, because Danny works at a graphic design company, and he works with my girlfriend, and she works there too. Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell her that then.
Yeah. It's a small world after all.
Danny worked on that. Was it the raw meat?
Fresh meat.
Yes. Yeah.
The short, right?
Yeah. Now you guys were saying you mentioned before we did in our unofficial pre-interview at the bar. You guys were talking about having you had a a setup at Fantasia this past summer, or what did you do? Or
you were asking us how Billy Trigger came about.
Yeah.
And we just went to this.
Went to the Fantasia party, opening party.
Opening party.
Okay.
And then he was there, and then Birch was there. Birch from JoeBlue.com.
Right.
And then I was saying, I was supposed to produce Billy Trigger in 2008, and then the market crashed and everything. It got really hard to get financing for movies. And then so I had to drop the project, and then he tried to get it done on his own, on his way with other producers, other partners all over the place. I don't know how many people you sent it to.
Oh, I wound up in L.A. I sent it in L.A. to people I know, and they loved the script, so they hired me to write another script, but they didn't want to make that one. Then I got it in Louisiana, and we were kind of setting up there, but then it didn't work out. So, go on.
And then, so we met at that party, and I'm like, I personally kind of gave up the idea of doing feature films because, the market has gotten so bad now for it, especially low-budget indies. And then DVD's dying, and VOD pays peanuts, so it doesn't really make economic sense. But I'm like, maybe. And we're thinking, look at the Trigger, so I could probably shoot it for a low budget amount. And Birch was there, and we start talking. And then a month later, we hooked up with him, and we ironed out the basics of a deal. And the deal was done in early August or end of August. Mm-hmm. And then September, we're in pre-production and start shooting a month later.
Jeez. Happened pretty fast.
Yeah, it was really fast.
And all that was leading up to my next question, which was to say, you guys said you haven't gotten a firm distributor yet.
Yeah.
But are you hoping that maybe it'll be prepared in time, or you'll have some way to have it at the next Fantasia Film Festival?
Definitely. It'll be ready by Fantasia.
Are you hoping to submit for the festival?
You already asked us to see it.
That's great. Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. Very cool.
And then, definitely be at Fantasia. Usually,
Fantasia's played all his films.
Every film I've ever made. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. And then they already asked to see it and stuff. And then in terms of distribution, I mean, it's the way I've done all my movies. Nowadays, when it's an indie movie, there's so much product out there. Nobody really picks up a movie right off the bat.
Yeah,
they usually want to see it. If you want to see the finished product, they like it, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
And that's how I sold all my films. So, it's not really.
we were talking to the Picnic Face guys who did Roller Town.
Oh, man.
And they were. What did they finish?
That movie was made like three, four years ago.
Do you know
Picnic Face?
No.
They're a sketch comedy troupe out of Halifax.
Okay. They do, I don't know if you watch any YouTube viral videos, whatever. They did the Power Thirst one that was really big.
I heard of them.
They made a feature called Roller Town. And what did they say? I think they finished shooting 2009 or something?
Something like that. And it's a great movie. It's
hilarious.
Really funny.
Like one of the.
It was at Fantasia this past summer. Real great movie.
Okay.
And it was just post-production hell.
Post-production hell, just
getting
distribution.
Just in the can and just couldn't get it out there.
So they had it cut and finished, but they couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
They had it cut and finished. Okay. They had,
and it was and it's a real funny movie, yeah.
They had a couple of the guys from Hobo with a Shotgun who was backing them, so they had a bit of cred going in. Plus, millions of views on YouTube, so they had an audience. They were like, we have an audience, we have a little bit of movie-making cred, we have a funny movie, and they're like, and it was just never going.
What's the movie about, though?
there you go.
It's about roller disc. It's like a roller disco
it's a
universe.
Roller disco comedy.
There you go, guys.
It's a little bit niche.
It's an offbeat comedy, though. But I don't think I've seen an audience at Fantasia laugh as hard as consistently.
It should self distribute.
I agree with you.
But
the problem is, the hardest thing to sell is comedy because it's really hard to export culturally.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the minute they hear comedy. They just already hung up.
Right, better be about a couple, or better be about
a rom-com or
something.
Exactly.
Because the problem is it's hard to export, right?
Yeah.
So it can be the most genius thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But the comedies that work, or they will buy, not that work, the one they will buy is rom-coms and stuff because everybody can relate to falling in love.
Yeah.
But everywhere in the world. But something that's offbeat and kind of off the track. Really hard sell.
No, for sure.
And the audience could be loving it. They don't care. All they want to do is make money. So they don't care about whatever audience.
Yeah, that's it. They were talking to one of the stars and stuff, and even he was like, I have a hard time talking about this movie because I don't really remember it. He's like, we're doing these Q&As 3 years later. And they're like, what's it like on the set? And he's like, I remember it was all right. it was okay. And at Fantasia, they had only had a VOD deal that they had set up, and they were obviously not fully happy with that, but they must have gotten something later, because when I was out in Calgary,
It's finally starting to get out.
It was actually playing on big screens. I doubt it probably. They probably maybe got something for Canada or whatever. Probably.
Canadian content, it would make sense. Yeah, but exactly. it will be a hard export, even if it was a piece of genius. But
yeah. But I just, whenever I hear about stuff like that, it's just super. What was the other one? The movie that. Midnight Meat Train that Lionsgate decided to.
Oh,
like,
with Vinnie Jones?
Yeah.
I know that story. Yeah, that was Joe Roth.
Yeah. And that was.
Guy that basically left Lionsgate on a high note by saying, fuck you. I'm going to fuck Midnight Meat Train up the ass and release it in $1 cinemas. Go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
He left high. But anyways, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, because that was Lionsgate decided they were going to put, was it The Strangers or The Visitors or something?
The Strangers.
Nev Campbell.
No, Liv Tyler.
They're so similar.
And that pretty boy dude.
Yeah, exactly. So they were like, "Oh, we're gonna give money to one movie, even though you have Midnight Meat Train. Just fuck it." That was sad. And that's it. What happens when you're in, I guess, the indie world is that there's only like a little bit of money to be shared amongst like a lot of probably great projects, right? Like,
that's the thing. That's why you have to kind of stick to the genre and then try to find a recipe that works. Which is always done. They try to do something. I mean, a lot of my films are not critical darlings, but they all made money. We always find somebody to buy them, which allowed us to make more. I mean, you know, you have to make a choice at one point.
Right.
You want to be in history books saying, "Oh, that was great. I made an Oscar-worthy picture. I never work again," or do movies and make earn a living. That's the choice you face.
Yeah.
So.
Have you worked primarily, Christian, in the horror genre, or
I'm more a sci-fi action guy.
Sci-fi action.
I've done a bit, but I'm not a big fan.
You mentioned that most, if not all, your films have been featured at Fantasia. What are some of the other ones?
We did a sci-fi trilogy about Space Marines called Recon. It's Recon 2020, 2022, 2023. They all played at Fantasia, and they've been playing on Space Channel for like 10 years now.
Yeah.
Who starred in those?
There was no big stars. It was all local actors.
It was no names. Yeah.
Okay. It was all no names. We did the first one, like the first half hour, the first one with $5,000 just to show Space Channel that we could do like a Space Marine movie on a budget.
Yeah.
And then it was still too high budget for them because all they could afford was $25,000 per half hour or something. Would have paid two actors for a week because at union rates.
Right.
So, all right, not great. So we ended up, they were very nice. They ended up hooking us up with another distributor. We said, well, you shot already half an hour, 5,000. That's 45. Shoot an extra hour, and then let's try to package that as a film. But it wasn't designed for that. We did our best with whatever we could, and then turned out it sold very well. Made $500,000 in sales, and then we used that to shoot the next one and the next one. And that's how it went until 2008 when everything came down.
The market crashed.
DVD market was already slowing down, and after 2008, it bottomed out.
Yep.
So there's no real market now for features unless you shoot them for very, very cheap. And I don't really like to shoot a movie and not pay anybody. So So we tried this experiment where we shot with a minimalist crew.
Paid everybody.
But
are we talking about Billy Trigger now?
Yeah. Pay everybody, but work as...
Except ourselves.
Yeah. And then work as hard as you can to try to make as good-looking a film. My sound guy was laughing. He said... Yeah, you have less crew than a documentary. You're shooting an action film. So I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah, but he also said it's the best performances
he's ever seen in any of our films. Yeah, it's true.
Is there any nudity in the film? That's really, I've been wanting to ask this since the get-go. And how
They're
soon?
On the clock.
pretty early.
Yeah, and actual practical question, does that help to sell a film?
Yes.
Yes and no. I disagree with you.
Yes and no, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, definitely yes in North America and some parts of Europe. Definitely no in the Middle East.
Everywhere else.
Yeah. South America also. They like
but I'd imagine that like genre film as a whole is kind of a tough sell outside of North America and Europe, though. Like the Middle East, I'm sure, wouldn't... in terms of like horror and sci-fi and like whatever, like... I don't know.
Horror,
like,
sci-fi in the Middle East doesn't sell well, but action films do. But if there's nudity... It's a no-go.
Yeah, you know, you just run with the scene. Boom, done.
Just cut it up. I actually knew a guy whose job it was to cut porn I guess down from like triple X to X or whatever. Okay. Like, so that they could put it on TV. His job was like, so it would like crop
the soft core to
crop the frame to like take out the penetration.
Take out all the anal. Yeah, take out the anal
and just like show like off. Like, had to entirely recut full triple X movies so that you could put them like late night onto cable.
So
they're
just NC-17.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess bring them down to NC-17.
I even know a Japanese distributor, you know, there was a movie called Pirates with.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
I mean, wait, what film?
Yes.
I mean, no, I don't know that film. Why don't you tell me what it's about? Was it? Did it feature Johnny Depp in it? I don't know that movie. Was it
Jesse
I believe
J.
what you were referring to is the most high-budgeted porn film ever made.
Yes.
Porn series.
Oh, there's two of them. Okay, well, I know about the first one.
Yeah. And what
they
did,
they removed all the porn, and then they made
and just
it.
Sold it as a full
movie. Released it as a really
shitty
pirate.
What was it, like 20 minutes long?
Exactly.
Like,
actually, it was surprising, but I think I still have the copy somewhere. But yeah, he gave it to this. It was all in Japanese. It was hilarious. But yeah, they did that. They bought it from Vivid, and they did that.
I don't know if I've ever actually mentioned this on the podcast, and I think I've actually asked you not to mention it. But this seems like a perfect lead-in. I spent one summer of my life writing pornographic scripts.
Really?
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
For a predominant locally based porn company.
Really?
Yes, which you probably know. That I'm not going to mention
we,
here. Cause
we actually, there was a party.
Fun times.
Yeah. There was a party at my house where this came up in conversation. And then one of the guys was like, I have a password for that site. And then we're just sort of like,
it's like a premium,
check out his movie.
It's a premium.
So we're like, sure enough, we like log in site. And like get it up on the big screen. And yeah,
I'm like, I wrote
that.
This one. And
we
I
like,
wrote
we,
this
we,
one.
We cut nice. Through the sex so that we could see the most of Walter's work. So
which is just like the first 2 minutes and the last 2 minutes.
Of course, yeah. Intro, outro.
And it was always kind of brutal, right? Because I would try to actually sort of put these stories together and stuff, and like, and I'd have dialogue,
and
I'd see the final product, and of course, none of the actors could do the dialogue, or couldn't like learn more than three lines of dialogue, and so the stories wouldn't look anything like what I wrote.
I'm like,
they blew the story entirely. This looks nothing like what I wrote.
Did you write the bocce ball one?
Yes. Well, okay. that one was not my initial idea, but then I inherited that script.
So there was like one like the setup. Was like a guy showing a girl how to play bocce ball, but like you could tell that the girl was probably like maybe from Prague or something, like an Eastern European porn star who didn't speak English. So that, they just cut the dialogue out completely. So there's like a 2 or 3 minute like awkward scene of two porn stars just playing bocce ball, like no dialogue, no setup, no anything, and then they fuck, and then you're like, and you're just sort of like, if I was watching this as porn, I'd be like, why are they playing so much bocce ball?
We actually had fucking meetings about that. We talked about like how to make it work better, and then to see what came out of that was really disheartening. I gotta say,
I actually want to check it out though.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
No.
Well, yeah,
you could probably find it not that hard. I'm sure there's not that many.
Well, what's
porn
it called?
Scenes.
What's it called?
Basketball porn.
It was
the Italian ball sport.
The title. No, well, the title of that film was actually "Play with My Bocce Balls."
You're fucking with me.
No.
That's the title of the movie.
Play with My Bocce Balls.
Well, it's a short, right? They're like
half-hour films.
That's the pinnacle of cleverness right there.
Yes, thank you, sir.
What was it? The big butts one?
What's
no,
bocce
the big
ball?
Dicks?
What's it?
What's a bocce
ball?
Oh, bocce.
Pardon my ignorance.
Guys,
like Italian lawn bowling.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Pétanque.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. Yeah. So they play that shit and then they fuck.
Yeah, exactly. But all dialogue is just removed, so it's like these just off porn stars who can't play bocce ball either. So they're just like playing a garbage game of bocce ball.
Then I don't know what
you're doing.
Like,
you're like, this is the
that's
worst.
Hilarious.
That's genius, man.
No, also the tape measure. How you had like, an idea to like. It was as much as possible. They wanted to have a tape measure on hand so they could measure the guy's dick or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So he was trying to write believable situations as to why a tape measure might be like lying around.
What's the motivation?
Why is there a tape measure in the scene? Well, he's a seamstress or whatever. He's like.
Understand that we were asked to churn out 3 times a day.
Yeah.
I had no clue that it was that intricate.
The company that he worked for, that's their
shtick.
Their brand like differentiator, I guess, is the fact that all their scenes have storylines. Their scenes have little scenarios and like whatever. They do a lot of the porn parodies.
Okay.
Like they did the Pulp Fiction one.
Okay.
Like that.
Fiction. They did a Pulp Fiction. Yeah, there's multiple Pulp Fiction.
You still work for these cats, or?
No. Let's make this very clear. I just one summer, I spent 2 months working.
You want to shoot yourself?
The Pulp Fiction one. Pulp Fiction one was so weird. You didn't write it, but we ended up watching the Pulp Fiction one, and the drug scene is like almost recreated shot for shot, but for like a while.
I think that one was an hour long. Right?
Yeah, but you're just sort of like you're in the middle of watching a porn, and then someone has like a violent OD and needs to be like hit with the drug, and you're like, well, this is not. Oh,
yeah,
a
Leverett just went down. Yeah.
You know, she's bleeding from the nose and everything. And they're like, why is this in a porn?
That's kind of wild.
It kills the mood, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, of all the scenes you could have kept, the dancing at the diner, that's all fine. Like, obviously, there's going to be some violence in the Pulp Fiction, but the, like, drug overdose, bleeding from the nose, adrenaline shot in the chest, you're like, why'd you keep this? Yeah. Like, you could have done without it. Like,
yeah.
You took the gimp out, oddly.
Yeah,
and. Very, very strange.
So this happened. Have either of you ever worked on a straight up porn?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Can't say I had the pleasure or displeasure. I did work with porn stars.
I know you mentioned that before.
That's pretty common, though, in Quebec.
Yeah.
John Jameson, Chasey Lane, Ginger Lynn Allen, Taylor Hayes. Sammy.
Come
on.
We're gonna have to at least watch this.
Yeah.
Like, it won't be the version.
The movie's the one they release is unwatchable. It's awful.
They reshot the whole ending with another director. It makes no sense. Like, don't bother.
They haven't cut so much gore that the movie doesn't even string along.
It's a fucking PG, man. No sense. Makes no sense.
I don't know. Like,
the
they hired
Walmart
me to do
DVD market, I guess. Like, whatever. Like,
no, I really
they
understand.
Hired me originally to do the goriest film I could make. Then when they saw the rushes, they're like. Evan Herschel, Gordon Lewis, and we're in New York showing scenes from the film. Yeah, he came to me and said, "Son, you freaked me out."
Nice.
Oh, like, okay, I guess man. I guess we succeeded.
Yeah. We are 45 minutes. We do 5 questions.
Do you remember the last one?
Yeah. Do you remember it? No, but do you remember it was Pat Pierce?
Yeah, I remember the guest. I don't remember.
No, but think about what. Anyway, we'll find it.
So here's the deal: we do this thing, we do the podcast, and then at the end we do like a 5-question segment.
Okay.
3 of the questions are regular.
Standard questions.
Or preset.
Yeah.
One question is a question
from our
previous guest, and the last question is a question that
you asked to the future guest. You guys can agree upon it.
Okay.
All right, that's pretty cool, man. You got
Groovy
so
out.
Mad at me. do you remember any of the questions?
Not a single one.
Episode 25, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I remember the questions, not the order or the exact wording. All right.
So there you go. First question to both of you, obviously. What was your favorite childhood toy, plaything, thing that made you happy as a kid? Like... We'll go Christian first.
Oh my god.
Could be like a book if you were like a book kid.
Yeah.
What are you showing?
Well, I like reading comic books a lot, but I think as far as a toy, I think it was G.I. Joe's, but the big ones, like the almost a foot tall ones.
Did you mute your fucking microphone?
I have no idea how long it's been muted.
Oh my god. Well, it's been muted for 4 minutes.
Okay, good. All right.
Fuck.
It's okay.
We give you guys the talk. He muted his microphone.
I muted my mic. See, I did it. Remember?
No. It was all him. You son of a bitch, Walter.
So you've been muted for the last, like, fucking 5 minutes?
4 minutes.
This is going to be a hysterical conversation.
All right. I'm just going to hold
We'll fill in the blanks. It's fine.
It was mostly you guys talking, so it's good.
Go ahead, man.
12-inch G.I. Joes.
Yeah,
like
the big G.I. Joes. Yeah, that's the one I had the most fun with.
The ones with the most customizable clothing and everything else.
Yeah, they were fun.
I mean, the little 3.5-inch figures were fun, but you couldn't dress them up.
I was too old for those. My young brothers at those. What the hell is that? It's not the real G.I. Joe.
John, favorite toy?
Oh, yeah, that's easy. Star Wars toys. The original series.
Yeah,
I used to have the Death Star.
Whoa.
And my brother and I would just do adventures and shit. You know, fuck Leia and all that shit.
Yeah. I was like, I've actually mentioned this on a previous podcast. I had a huge set of figures also. And it was like, as soon as, I don't know which misguided family member or whatever got me Slave Leia. Like, specifically, like, Slave Leia. But I'm like, well, now playtime is basically rape. Like, bad guys have her and they're raping her, good guys rescue her, and then they have celebration sex. Like, just what you get when you give me...
Because so many women are up for celebration sex following a month worth of rape.
Yeah. Whatever. You gave, like, 10-year-old me a fucking... Like, slave Leia action figure. With, like, the skirt and the bikini. Like, yeah, it's...
Yeah, the shit Greedo did to Leia.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous. But anyways,
fucking, if Bebop and Rocksteady got a hold of her, it was, like,
this is the darkest answer we've ever got. My favorite toy, I gotta say. Question the second. Is this the drink one?
It's a drink.
Hey, I got it. What's your favorite drink, non-alcoholic or alcoholic?
Alcoholic?
Either
alcoholic
or
non-alcoholic. It's up to you.
It used to be Jack Daniels, my favorite whiskey. But I just have a tendency to get in fights and be very rambunctious on
That's
it.
Fair, yes.
So I stopped drinking it, now I'm on Jameson, and I'm really liking it.
That just keeps
it
happy and mellow.
It keeps me happy and
no
mellow.
Fights.
Chill. It's better distilled, you know?
Let's wait till St. Patrick's Day for that.
My dad used to, still might, I don't know, I don't live with him anymore. My dad used to drink about, say, like a finger or two of Jack every night. Like,
and we beat the shit out of you? Or?
No. It was like after the kids
went
to
bed. That's a really personal question. Well,
no,
why
I mean,
are you making these dark, man?
My mom beat the shit out of us. My dad didn't.
What was she drinking?
She was just a wine
She's
lady.
She's a Merlot lady.
Yeah, she was just wine.
She's got her own shit going
Merlot
on.
Merlot violent.
And, but I remember this because if I woke up late at night, my dad would just like give me a little sip of Jack.
And he was five at the time.
You were super young. And just be like, have this. Hey,
back
and go
sleep.
Back to bed. Yeah. I'm like, it burns a little.
That's how you know it's good.
Yeah, exactly. What about you,
Christian? I miss tequila.
Nice.
Tequila?
Very good. I like that. What kind of tequila?
Well, pretty much all kinds of tequila except mezcal because I got so sick on
That's
that.
Different, though.
Not the same thing. It's family, though.
It's like jet fuel. It's like
no, it's not. Do you want me to tell you why it's not?
Go, lay it on me.
Well, as far as I know, well, actually, might be from the same family because they're both derived from the cactus, right?
Yeah,
from
it's more aguave, yeah.
The aguave, yeah, and but like one's from the flower and one's from
the difference
nectar.
With the mezcal is that it's a sick cactus. It's getting eaten by that worm. That's what they put in
it. Yes. Because a lot of people erroneously believe that the worm is in a tequila bottle, but it's actually supposed to be the mezcal bottle.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Keith loves tequila.
I love
tequila. He hates tequila so much.
I mean, going to Mexico is like super dumb because everything that's not tequila is shitty. It's like a shitty rum or a shitty bourbon or a shitty whatever. You're like, fuck. Just like constantly I was trying to like find the right combination of drink that wouldn't... I was like, okay, gin tonic. It's like, it's hard to fuck up. Their tonic tastes like cherries.
Yeah.
And he knows, like, why? What the fuck does your tonic taste like cherries? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make no sense.
I was at an all-inclusive, so just, like, drinking constantly, but the only thing that would taste...
Where in Mexico did you go?
We were in Riviera Maya.
I don't know what that is. Okay.
Just south of Cancun.
Third question.
So, tequila.
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 Third question.
Yeah.
Keith? Most fun you've ever had.
Best time of your life.
Totally open. Best time.
Could be a concert. Could be skydiving. Could be
a shoot you were on.
Shoot you were on.
Probably not the one that keeps.
Probably not
that.
Oh, yeah,
I got it. Want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, you know, I've lived, you know, I've lived pretty well. So, yeah, I've done skydiving, all that shit. But I'll always remember this one time I was at this after hours called Stereo.
Yep.
And this was like...
Where was this at? Is local?
It's
Stereo.
St. Catherine.
Of course you know.
Like east, right on the line, you know? Right before the Gay Village, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Near Barrie.
Yeah. Anyways, long story short, this was in the days where you could actually fuck in the place.
Okay.
You know?
Fair enough.
So long story short, I'm sitting down at the showroom, and there's this chick riding me. And this other chick... I'm not kidding, by the way.
This is already the best.
This other chick is making out with that chick while this chick is riding me. And I'll always remember that moment. I was looking up, and I said, you know what, man? Can't get better than this one. It's all good.
That's good. That's fair. That's a good.
It's a great moment for me.
That's a good one. That's the best. You win on that question so far.
I don't know.
Ever.
You know, Plastic Patrick, the Montreal drag queen. His story was his. But as a her, because he was as Plastic Patrick doing the duet with Cyndi Lauper. That was up there also.
He did a duet with Cyndi Lauper, whatever. He wasn't getting
ridden. He wasn't getting ridden by a chick. You were having porn star sex in the chill room at Stereo.
Yeah, that was good.
I gotta say, I kind of I like yours.
My memories of Stereo are not that good.
You know, like, I wish I went first.
No, I was shot there with Corey Amy. It was a nightmare.
With who?
Corey Aim.
Okay, I thought you said Tori Amos for a second.
Yeah, no,
Corey.
I was like,
shot at
That'd
Stereo?
Be strange.
Yeah, we shot a movie there.
And what was it, Groove Society?
Groove Society. Yeah. Oh, my fuck.
It never got finished or got finished? Or,
I think it got finished, but it was a nightmare, that shoot.
So is that movie Pure, right? Pure. Well, Pure wasn't Stereo. Pure was Aria.
Yeah.
Pure was...
Yeah, Jim
yeah.
Donovan. Yeah.
So your best time ever.
Best time
my
ever.
My best time ever. I think it's in a movie shoot as well. It's a movie show. We shot a 70s scene and ended up having to all be all improv because the cars broke down and stuff. I think that's the most fun I've ever had shooting something.
What was the project?
It was for a scene for Recon 3. We had to do a reshoot. It was not supposed to be fun because we had to reshoot. They wanted nudity earlier in the film.
Right.
And then they said, you know, one breast and then I'm like, all right, again. And then we were like... So we just decided to do whatever the fuck we felt like doing. So, oh, you want breasts? I found a girl with the biggest breasts I could find. And then we said, you know what? It's a sci-fi movie. Screw that. We'll make it in the 70s. We just made a kind of a total delirious thing. We made it the dream. The guy was dreaming about that. And then slapped it on because we had no time to shoot it and stuff. And then it was like, just like we felt so free.
That does sound like, pretty fun.
Yeah, it was
like
it was
a very funny scene. Like,
it's
when
very
you stopped
funny.
Caring, it was just so much fun.
Yeah. No, it was like the pressure just all lifted up, and I screwed it. I was just going to do what we feel like. And then I was like, wow. And then we had so much fun. Like the whole crew got into it, and we like the cast too, and it was great. We had a great time.
Now is the question from our previous guest, who is Pat Pierce, and he owns a piercing salon in the Village.
All right.
And
basically, Montreal is like the place to go if you want like a really fucked up piercing. Like if you're about to pierce your
on
junk,
your genitals,
if you're about to pierce
if you
your
want
junk,
a really good genital piercing,
you
go
probably
want
to go
Thanks
see this 411.
Just letting you know, FYI.
Yeah, I'm not saying.
Well, I mean,
like if you know,
if you
have friends, like
you never know.
Yeah, exactly. Like a really clean place and everything else. His question that is, I guess, open to interpretation. Is what is your ideal glory hole?
Okay.
But is it really open to interpretation?
But like the thing is because then when he went to go on to explain it further, he's a little weird.
I really don't remember this question.
Okay. When he went on to go on explain it a little bit further, he said that it could be kind of like a metaphoric glory hole.
Oh, yeah, I can see
that,
yeah.
Like, just in terms of, like, what's the situation where
the
you're,
fuck
like...
What is a metaphoric glory hole, though?
You get it. Where,
I
kind of
get
sort of
it.
Like, you're like, fuck it, I'm going all in. Like, I'm putting my dick
Trying
in this.
Yourself. Yeah.
Not
exactly.
Knowing what the consequences
might
be.
Yeah, not knowing what the consequences might be. Like,
it could get chopped off. Or it could
get a lot of herpes.
I'm not, and my interpretation
so
of the question is, what's the weirdest thing you've ever put your penis inside of? That's how I see that.
So that's Stereo.
No,
Stereo was not weird.
No, that was not weird. That sounded amazing.
No, what Keith said. Answer what Keith
go
said.
Go the metaphoric. Yeah, like where's the situation where you're just going to, like, just fuck it and go all in?
Wow. Okay. I mean, you know, I've never really, like, put my dick, like, in a Rubik cube or some shit.
It doesn't need to be about your dick. It could
fit.
Be about life, right? It could be just, the, like...
I'll always remember this moment, and it will... And I can't believe I'm going to say this. Oh, well.
This is one of the weirdest interviews I've ever had.
I know.
It's a good podcast.
I used to date this chick that would like to get fucked dressed as a clown.
Is everybody's thing still on, first of all, here?
Don't worry. That track is still
on.
Don't interrupt him,
clown
dude.
Chick. Okay.
You know, this chick would like to, like, put like a fucking rubber nose and put the fucking costume where you're, like in the back there'd be like a Velcro thing and you
know,
like, could fuck her
this.
In the ass or whatever, you know? So she's dressed like... And this has nothing to do with the glory hole question. So,
doesn't matter anymore.
Doesn't matter. This is the best answer.
The chick is dressed like a clown. I'm dating her for a while. And at first I thought, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, all right. I'll fuck her as a clown. So I'm fucking her doggy style. Remove the Velcro. I'm fucking her up the ass. Yeah. And she does like a clown. So I'm about to blow my load. I take it out. Put it in her mouth. You know, she swallows everything. But the thing is... When I fucked her in the ass, a lot of shit wound up on my dick.
She made a balloon on the bed.
So when she swallowed my load, and then I looked at her face, and she's like, And you see her fucking mouth moving, like, she stayed stinging her own shit. She's like, ooh! And then she got up. And keep in mind, she's dressed like a fucking clown. She got up, boom, 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 and went to fucking rinse her mouth and shit. And I'm sitting there butt naked with her heart, and I'm like, that's the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Literally.
Funny. Yeah, literally.
And literally.
Chick dressed like a clown, hopping around.
Yes.
To wash her own shit out of her mouth.
That's amazing.
So... That is the weirdest fucking glory hole
that's
got, I ever
that's
gloried hole.
We'll take it.
Thank you.
Wow.
Christian, that story is Christian.
I was supposed to top that.
Top it. Top it.
Oh,
Holy shit.
So I'm fucking Fred Williamson.
Right? There's a cigar up my ass.
Jesus. Jesus Christ. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say to that after that.
There's some sort of award. You just won it, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
there
cool,
was
thanks,
an award.
Man. Sadly, it's true.
If you go metaphorically, I think every time you make a movie, it's like throwing yourself off a cliff. Yeah. So I've done it like at least 7 times. So now,
so you put your dick in 7 glory holes, more or less.
Yeah, it is because yeah, sure. You start this project, you have no clue if you're going to have enough money to finish it. Because you budget it, but everything can go wrong. You don't know if everything is going to go well. You don't know like what kind of people you're going to work with. Yeah. You have no clue. And then everything, usually I produce them, so it's also all on my back. Inside, if something goes wrong or whatever, so I guess yeah, it's kind of a jumping in with no net,
with no rubber.
No rubber.
You're jumping in glory hole.
No rubber, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't use a rubber on a glory hole. I think it defeats the
purpose,
spirit of the whole
the spirit
glory
of the
hole.
Thing.
Yeah, but then it's called herpes.
Glorious. Yeah, it's just not as glorious.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse. Yeah.
So that happened. Okay. Now is the point where we ask you what your question will be for the following.
Yeah. As a duo, if you guys can agree to a question.
So,
I could come up with some sick shit.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't even know if John should be in charge of this one.
You should definitely reasonable put person. Input. And keep in mind, we have no idea who the next guest is going to be. Could be
the Pope.
Could be the Pope. We're still pulling for Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
We really
want that's not happening now.
I remember that.
Damn it.
I was going to send him a sample podcast.
I'll let you take it, because, my shit's just going to be something sexual and gross.
I have no problem with that.
Why not? They're obviously open to it.
All right, I got one. I got one. And how can I put this? Did you ever blow your load in a chick's mouth, and then her, without telling you...
What if it's a woman, first of all? Not that we have many female
guests. Not that we have many female.
Not that we have many. I mean, there's a very slim chance it'll be a lady.
We had like
probably
two.
Won't be.
Well, you fucked me now, man. I guess.
You know what?
That question doesn't work.
I actually know who the next guest is going to be.
Is it a woman?
No, but it still shouldn't be this question.
Could be a gay person. Yeah. But if it's a gay guy,
do you want
to be related to a woman?
No, it could be a gay dude. I mean, I don't give a fuck, But,
Why don't
I'll let Christian take it, man. I mean,
Do you have a question in mind that you'd like to ask somebody? Well, not knowing what they're about or what they do?
Did you ever shove a finger up your ass while masturbating?
Yeah. No.
That applies to everybody, man. No?
Did you ever shove your finger up your ass while masturbating?
Honest answer.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weird that question
about
to somebody.
Somebody
you don't know.
Like
a
weird,
survey
dude.
Question. Like.
Oh. I'm going to go with the your finger ass thing.
Go with it, dude.
I don't know. My tendency would be somebody you barely know. You just want to know something embarrassing about them or whatever. It's like, what's the most...
You didn't
know
a person... asked us, will we ever glory hold or some shit?
I talk about
a finger up the ass.
That wasn't
offended,
our fault.
Yeah.
That wasn't our
that
fault.
Was that was from a fetish piercer,
that was
the fault.
The
question was...
That's from John Fallon.
We got some harsh shit out of that interview. But like, if you're getting to know somebody the most you can in 5 minutes, and you want to ask them a few questions...
Well, I think something that tells a lot about somebody is that what is the most embarrassing moment you've ever been, and then you actually managed to get out?
To get out of.
Without, being that too embarrassing.
Without losing face.
Without losing face.
Yeah, that's good. It's like the time you shit your pants and like threw the underwear in the garbage and like, but still pulled
off
the
bait.
Yeah,
happens to me a few times.
I was just going commando.
You're not there when the clown comes back to bed. You've left already.
Yeah.
Because it says a lot about who you are. Like if you can, how quick you think and everything. So I don't know.
We can do both. Sub
question. Have you ever jerked off?
I know this dude's going to keep mine in the bank.
No, we will. It's everything's in the bank. At this point.
So can I ask a stupid question?
Yeah, no, please. There is no stupid question, clearly, at this point.
No, but what's the purpose? Because you seem to have a wide variety of guests. Yeah. So what's the purpose of the podcast, exactly?
We try to this is a question back at us. We try to just put, a spotlight on interesting shit that goes on in Montreal.
Okay.
Primarily locals.
We had a couple people from, obviously just for laughs, a couple people from the Fringe and stuff who were out-of-towners, but something's going on in Montreal and we think it's kind of interesting, we'll sit down with you guys
project, if they have a specific project that they want to
put plug.
That's why it's called Go Plug Yourself.
Okay.
So someone who, we've had actors, we had comic book artists, we've had visual artists, musicians.
A lot of stand-up comics.
Comedians, because, well, Walter does the stand-up comedian, so they're... Okay. And they're usually down to talk for an hour. Comedians are usually like, I'll talk. So, yeah, no, that's really cool.
There's not enough initiatives like that. Congratulations.
Yeah, good job. A little bit broader than a lot of the other podcasts.
But ironically, not very many broads.
Hey,
guys, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us today.
We've had John Fallon,
yep.
Christian Viel.
Yeah.
There you go. And they are part of the forthcoming feature, Billy Trigger.
Yeah.
Yep.
Co-starring...
I guess Fred the Hammer.
Fucking the Hammer Williamson.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. Had a great time.
I guess...
Thanks a lot, guys.
Without even trying, probably going to be at the 2013 Fantasia. But
probably.
Hopefully in other venues and... Places, exactly. But it's just
people,
like
a lot of people are already waiting for it. So,
stay
tuned for that.
Yeah, we got to get Mitch on.
Yeah, we said we'd have him on around Christmas.
Oh fuck, we got to go.
Yeah, exactly. Christmas morning, we'll do it.
Christmas
the
25th. Morning, yeah. Come on, Mitch. Because yeah, we were talking to him during the fest, and he was like,
"You guys know Mitch Davis?"
Yeah. He was like, "He's like, I really
we're like, can we? We wanted to have him on during Fantasia. He's my schedule's not going to be like open for another 8 months." Like,
yeah, exactly. We asked him a little before. He's like, "No." Then we talked to him during. He's like, "No," and we're like, "We understand."
Let's shoot for Christmas.
We're just sort of like Christmas. He's like, "That is actually a lot better." And we're like, "We don't care. We'll have you on." No time anywhere near your festival. Fuck. Anyway, yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. That was awesome.
No problem, guys.
That's fun. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's me again, wasting your time at the end of the podcast where it doesn't matter anyways. Look, if you're a fan of the show and the site in general, please take the time to like us on Facebook. We are number9to5dotcc, 9to5.cc on Facebook. And also follow us on Twitter. We're @number9to5cc on Twitter. So, and also be sure to check back on the site for something on Mondays, probably. We have Zombies in Loathing After the Bomb usually on Tuesdays. We have a new comic in 9to5 Illustrated every Wednesday. A new podcast every week, usually on Thursday. It's either going to be a 9ES or a Go Plug Yourselves. And on Fridays, we have Fine Arts with either Sophie and Scott. And, you know, maybe John will even contribute one of his mega articles at some point, too. You can only hope. All right, thanks.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.